Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 7th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Well, good. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So, D.R., the one of the serious, unfortunately way too serious topics that the Trump administration has under consideration is whether or not the United States should walk away from the Paris Accords. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just remind everybody, the Paris Accords is basically an agreement among 194 nations that was signed with considerable fanfare in December of the year 2015. That's now, mm-hmm. more than a year ago, 15 months. That Paris Agreement is the best, most viable chance to find a way to address climate change. So it's exceedingly important. Mr. Trump, of course, has campaigned against, said that he would pull us out of the, unsign the Paris Agreement as if mm-hmm. he could do that. I mean, all he can do is pull out and kind of becomes 193 nations without mm-hmm. leadership. But he claims that he would do that on the campaign trail. He claimed to be willing to pull out of the Paris Accord. So there's different names, right? The Paris Agreement, the Paris Accord, yada, yada. But Paris. Recent reports suggest that there is a knife fight going on inside the Trump White House, or maybe a universal, what is it? Universal
UFC.
Fight, UFC.
Exactly.
Between
Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Ultimate Fighting. A conflict between two factions within the Oval Office, one evidently led by Steve Bannon and mm-hmm. one evidently led by Rex Tillerson. You can just imagine those two guys facing off, staring at each other. Now, so what's the debate about? Well, Mr. Bannon, being the hand grenade thrower that he appears to be, wants mm-hmm. President Trump to simply pull out of the Paris Accord, which has legal issues, right? I mean, it's not mm-hmm. so easy as just pulling out, but basically to insult and denigrate the Paris Accord and say the United States is going to take its football and go home and not play anymore in the Paris Accord. That's what mm-hmm. Bannon wants, in the hopes that the whole Paris Accord collapses without American leadership, which mm-hmm. is a possibility. The flip side, the hero on the other side, strangely enough, is Mr. Tillerson, who is ex-Exxon, ex-Exxon, I suppose you could say, former CEO of Exxon, has a long and abiding interest in burning all the oil that he can, or having the world burn all the oil that it can. But as Secretary of State, evidently he is considering being the faction that doesn't want to pull out of the Paris Accord. Mm-hmm. And you might wonder, why is it that someone with Tillerson's background, but his new role as Secretary of State, might want to remain in the Paris Accords? And mm-hmm. that's because the Paris Accords, this agreement has, because the rest of the world believes the science and it understands the gravity of the situation, is committed to trying to make the Paris Accords work. For the mm-hmm. United States, the purported leader of the world, to pull out of the agreement and basically walk away and what are the phrases you have? Thumb its nose, give it the raspberry, basically tell them to jump off a cliff, all that kind of stuff. For the United States to leave would have enormous consequences outside of climate issues, right? It would call into question all of America's agreements, all of its alliances, because the world depends on the United States to be reliable and to follow through on what it has promised to do. And of course, in this instance, I agree with Mr. Tillerson, right? We should not pull out of the Paris Accord. My guess is that Mr. Tillerson wants to keep us in the Paris Accord, but not actually do anything. Right? Yeah. So we're present, but extremely passive, right? And that way he avoids the diplomatic catastrophe of pulling out of the Paris Accord, right? The catastrophe being for all of the other problems that, right? I mean, how can you, like, solve an agreement on Syria or Iran if everyone thinks, if the United States just decides to walk away from it after it's all been written up?
Exactly. And let me advance another theory as to what may be going on here with regard to Tillerson. We mentioned a couple of weeks ago that two former Republican secretaries of state, James Baker and George Shultz, tried to present the Trump administration with a proposal to walk away from President Obama's regulatory plans to address carbon and replace it with a federal carbon tax with a dividend. And my theory was that the reason why Shultz and Baker were involved in this is because they recognized the domestic political ramifications of abandoning all efforts to reduce carbon pollution. It may be that Tillerson is savvy enough to recognize that if Trump pulls out of Paris, there will be domestic ramifications in terms of U.S. politics. And there's a bit of a precedent for this, because if you remember back in 2001, when George W. Bush abandoned the Kyoto Protocol, it was a profoundly unpopular decision that significantly damaged his poll numbers and caused several months of strife within the White House. They basically didn't know what to do in terms of these declining poll numbers on the heels of the abandonment of the Kyoto Protocol. Rex Tillerson is not a stupid guy. Obviously, you know, there's been plenty of speculation that he and the people he's really loyal to don't particularly like the Paris Climate Agreement, and in an ideal world might walk away from the Paris Climate Agreement. But he's smart enough to know that if Trump pulled out of Paris, there would be significant, severe political damage that would have ramifications presumably in 2018 and 2020, and then Rex Tillerson would be a former Secretary of State. So I think the guy likes his job, and I think he wants to hang around, so he probably figures that recognizing the political ramifications in the United States of abandoning Paris, perhaps that's why he's saying, let's not walk away from it. Let's sort of be tepid players in Paris, but let's not simply stick a middle finger in the face of the rest of the world, and by implication, and also alienate voters in the United States.
It's funny you should say that because I try as best I can to avoid political conflict in the workplace, but I had an interesting conversation with a colleague, again, nice enough guy. Does not like Trump particularly, but now that Trump's in place, he's kind of happy. He's content. He's not awake at night. But he said a curious thing. He said, this is about the EPA. He said, Trump wants to cut the EPA. He says, I don't know why they want to do that. Right? And it's like, just to your point, it's like even the most, the EPA is a beloved thing in the environment, not environmentalism in quotation marks, because that doesn't work, but somehow not taking care of the planet in some, or the air, right? The air and the water does resonate with people.
Exactly. People like clean air. People like clean water. They don't want to drown. They don't like wildfires. They don't like superstorms. They don't like hurricanes. And when you take actions that make those problems worse, it's going to be a severe political backlash. And I would again submit that Tillerson is a smart enough guy, his own ideological preferences notwithstanding, to recognize how bad it would be politically if Trump simply abandoned Paris.
Right. I heard some reference today that, most Americans are in the what they call the breathers lobby.
Exactly.
The lobby of people that want to continue breathing. Anyway, so speaking of these things, another interesting thing that requires some background, because we'll probably see continuing pushback on it. But one of the things our president has done is to sign an executive order to try to have the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, begin the process of changing a regulation called the Waters of the United States, the WOTUS, kind of like POTUS, only it's WOTUS, and it refers to the Waters of the United States. It's very confusing as to exactly what the whole deal is. But it turns out that the Clean Water Act of 1972 or so said that the EPA has jurisdiction over the the navigable waters of the United States. Or the, right? Mm-hmm. In the phrase navigable waters is important. So they're talking about the Mississippi River, Chesapeake Bay, I mean, all the Great Lakes, all that kind of stuff that you can navigate over. And these are the waters of the United States. Mm-hmm. Over the course of time, I think the science has advanced, and EPA and all these people begin to recognize that the smaller and smaller bodies of water that feed into the Mississippi River or feed into Chesapeake Bay have an important impact on the major bodies of water. And so after much roundabout over decades, I mean, this has taken years from the Bush administration through the Obama administration to try and sort this thing out, there was a set of regulations released in 2015 that extended the jurisdiction of the EPA to much smaller bodies of water, to even to the point of they call them vernal streams, or little streams of water that are present in the springtime but then dry up in the summer, right? These kinds of much more ephemeral water bodies. And, of course, this has an impact, has a significant impact, right? Because there's lots of little places where there are ditches and marshlands and stuff. And, of course, that has set off the opposition. And Mr. Trump is trying to get the EPA to begin the process of making the scientific case that this should be rolled back and taken away. Did you see any of that, DR? Is that a long explanation?
Yes, and a former EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy, who we must note has been, along with another former EPA Administrator, Christine Todd Whitman, they've been both quite courageously outspoken in pushing back against the Trump and Pruitt agenda with regard to energy and the environment. Gina McCarthy released a statement several days ago in which she noted, quote, "An executive order may give the illusion that they're fulfilling a campaign promise to gut the EPA, but it doesn't trump a rule. Only a new rule based on a new record can make current rules go away. The only thing these orders do is make clear this administration will defer needed public health protections for the American people for the sake of partisan politics," unquote. Very well stated, very accurately stated, and it's a bitter and savage irony that Trump, in his address to Congress several days ago, his address to a joint session of Congress, declared that he supports, that he wants to work in a bipartisan manner for clean air and clean water, when all he's providing is hot air and dirty water.
Well, it's interesting. It's an interesting point, the Gina McCarthy, what you're just saying, is that you just can't rescind a rule, right? You have to have a new rule. So presumably they have to go through a process of getting science to support what I would call a weaker rule about the waters of the U.S. And that, again, is going to take time, right? And I'm sure will be fought bitterly in every courtroom across the country, right? Interesting.
It's funny, you know, when you go back to the Dakota Access controversy and the catchphrase "water is life." Well, if you don't care about life, you're not going to care about water, are you?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean, the thing that I read said that Mr. Trump, to give him that honorific, when he signed the document, said that hundreds of thousands of jobs had been lost due to this rule. And I think it was the Washington Post gave him four Pinocchios. It's basically a false statement.
Exactly.
Of course. And I don't even want to say, oh, that's only what we expect from this guy. I mean, it's an embarrassment when the President of the United States, that when he tells a whopper, you just say, oh, there he goes telling another whopper, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just an insult to the country.
Exactly.
Anyway, okay, two other topics. One is the gutting of the EPA, right? And so exhausted by Trumpian stuff, but it sounds like they're going to take 20 or 25% of the EPA's money away. Is that, have you seen anything like that?
Yes. According to the Washington Post, they apparently plan to reduce the agency's staff by one-fifth in the first year and eliminate dozens of programs, even down to, I believe, the Energy Stars program. They plan to get rid of, according to at least one report.
This is the Energy Star you see at Home Depot or on your refrigerator,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. Just vicious, vicious stuff. This is apparently, according to at least one report, you know, guided by the dark hand of the Heritage Foundation, the fossil fuel funded Heritage Foundation. And again, going back to the point we've made earlier about the political ramifications of destroying environmental protection, you do have to wonder if this attempt to gut the EPA to sort of you know, shrink the EPA down to nothing will generate such a political backlash that it may result in Pruitt's exit. Again, we've cited before Ann Gorsuch and how vicious of a job she did on the EPA, so vicious that President Reagan had to literally get rid of her 1 year before his reelection campaign commenced because he knew that would be a massive political liability. And there are a number of reports saying that even politicians who have ideological grievances with the EPA also recognize that they're not just cutting fat, they're cutting bone, right. And they may themselves push back against this.
Probably jobs in every congressional district that have to do with the EPA, right?
I mean,
these are real people with real jobs.
But as Christine Todd Whitman and Gina McCarthy have both pointed out in various media appearances, some of the stuff that the EPA has to do, it's done by law. Requirements in the Clean Air Act, requirements by various court rulings. They have to spend this money. They have to make these investments. So Trump simply can't take his ideological chainsaw and just cut everything up.
I thought you were going to say take his set of crayons and write his name in another book. All right. So I guess the other thing just to point out is that in the realm of divestment, right, mm-hmm. and the carbon bubble, right? And when we say carbon bubble, what we mean is that the valuations, the stock value that big oil companies have is based on the oil that they have in the ground and mm-hmm. have not yet pumped. Right? It turns out that this past week, several things happened in that front. One is that, I guess, Exxon chose to take tar sands, the oil that they had claimed as being part of their value that was tied up in tar sands up in Alberta or something. Exxon mm-hmm. decided to take that off the list and reduce the value of their company by saying, oh no, we no longer consider those tar sands oil reserves as value to us. And so now we're a slightly smaller company. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yes.
that is like the bubble beginning to burst when Exxon mm-hmm. says, oh, we're not as big as we told you yesterday, Mr. Stockholder. We're actually much smaller because we actually can't get at that tar sands. Mm-hmm. Another interesting point of fact is that Chevron Corporation, right? And we've talked about the Chevron deference and all that kind of stuff over the course of time. Chevron Company, I guess, has told its shareholders that if Chevron gets sued over things like the fact that Chevron might have known about climate change and not told mm-hmm. its shareholders, that could have an adverse impact on the stock price, right?
Yes, and that would be poetic justice because Chevron, as we've discussed before, you know, we always talk about ExxonMobil, how much they were involved in climate denial, and Koch Industries, how much they were involved. Chevron they were as vicious as you could imagine. And Chevron, as we've noted before, used to advertise heavily in National Review magazine, and we've discussed National Review magazine's role in its rhetorical assault on Michael Mann that led to a lawsuit that is still ongoing. And obviously, you know, Chevron has a really nasty, nasty history in terms of aggressive attacks on climate science. And boy, if they did face you know, legal liability for that stuff, that would be poetic justice to
Max. It's almost like the whole tobacco thing being played over, because the third mm-hmm. interesting thing, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that Shell Oil, somebody dug up a movie, right? Mm-hmm. Some sort of trailer movie, 10-minute long movie from 1990 or so, mm-hmm. where Shell Oil says, oh, look, the climate is changing, and mm-hmm. that the oil that we're talking about is changing the climate. Mm-hmm. And that was that was 27 years ago, right?
And think about it. Shell produced this movie. So think about this. You know, Shell provided the warning.
Yeah.
Shell gave an explanation, and yet nevertheless they persisted in being affiliated with ALEC and some of the other groups trying to block any action to reduce emissions.
I mean, the point being that, I mean, this information is out there, and the whole move to try and hold the oil industry responsible mm-hmm. Continues to percolate, shall we say, mm-hmm. right? It's not getting smaller.
And now, here's an interesting question, though. How much backlash that Shell should otherwise face may be mitigated by the fact that Shell is, much like Exxon, one of these companies that now says, hey, not only do we acknowledge that it's real today, the best thing to do is to put a price on carbon. Will that sort of tone down the heat that they otherwise deserve because they've essentially done what Exxon does, and there are other oil companies that have done this that will basically say, hey, you know, we're for pricing carbon. Don't accuse us of being villains. Can they convince people that they've pivoted, so to speak?
I think what we need to do is invite Maura Healey on our show and find out what she thinks about it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we got to leave it there, DR. We'll tell everyone that they can check out links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at @massclimateaction. Please share us so that other people can get to the show. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and many other, your favorite podcast directory. Of course, you can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.